You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Discover your new roads in a Chevrolet this August. Rates as low as 0% for 84 months OAC, only at Lakewood Chev. Flamer, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Jason. Let's try that again. I'm doing well, Jason. How there are you? Go.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I think this, that one's, that's good there. So, can you hear me now? All right, perfect. So, let's talk about the game. First of all, Canada's undefeated so far. Their last two games, though, were much more competitive than their opener when they won 10-0. The United States, I was kind of a little surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, but Russia really, really dominated them on Wednesday. So did the U.S. just have a bad game, or are they not as strong as some thought coming into this tournament?
Well, we know it's their B team. It's not their A team. The Russians are really skilled. I haven't been down to Red Deer. I've been at the games here all week, so I didn't see that game at all. But I'm told that the Russians are given full credit for the win, that they're an explosive team. They've got, Vasily Podkolzin. It looks like a real good prospect for the future. Drafted by Medicine Hat. Don't think he's coming. But he is the real deal. So they've got an elite player on their team, and going up against the U.S. B squad. I give the U.S. credit. They came back from 3-0 and tied it, but
now,
couldn't come back.
Why does the U.S. bring their B squad?
Well, it's not a double IHF event, so the U.S. National Development Team only plays in those events all year. Why this particular tournament? Maybe now that it's getting a lot more exposure, maybe they'll change that in the future. But that's the deal right now.
Huh. And so it's all... I knew it was that way many years ago. I thought the U.S. had kind of changed on that one. So why is this not a double IHF?
It's a great question. I don't have the answer to. There's several tournaments through the year that Canada doesn't go to that the U.S. team does. Little tournaments in Europe throughout the season. Then they have like the U-17s up. Last year was in Dawson Creek, I think it was. Canada is obviously there for that, and the U.S. team goes to those events. But why the Ivan Hlinka tournament isn't a double IHF sanctioned event, I don't have the answer to.
Now, what about for CHL fans looking at this tournament as far as any of the imports coming in? Are there guys on this team, whether it's Slovakia, Czech, and we can start in the Western League? So for
sure.
People that are getting set, that Western camps are starting in a few weeks, that some names maybe they should be watching for joining selective teams.
Yeah, I don't know if they're handing out rosters when the fans come in or not, but there's four WHLers on the Russian team, two of them for the Regina Pats. I don't have a sheet, unfortunately, but Sedov is one of them. In fact, both of the Regina Russians that are playing in the game today actually played in Colorado last year, so I'm not sure how that worked out, but the Russians have a handful of WHL players on their team, and we've seen a couple of guys for the other squads as well. Switzerland's got a really small, like 5'7 guy who's going to be going to Portland. And he's like, they list him at 5'7, 3/4.
Yeah.
They're probably being pretty generous.
I watched that game and I was like, is that on skates?
Yeah.
Is kind of what I said. And you know what? Hey, we've seen a lot of small players have success, and especially at the junior levels, right?
It's true.
Size that isn't nearly as much of an issue. It just becomes more of a strength thing. And it's not that people don't give them opportunities. It's just at times it's really difficult as you go up the pyramid of ability. As you get closer to the top, there's lots of guys that are just as skilled as some of those small players.
Yeah, no question. And Portland's actually had success with small guys. Nick Pétain's not a big guy. Brendan Leipzig's not a big guy. Ryan Hughes, who's there now, he's a really good player, and he's 5'8".
Yeah. Guy Flaming joining us. So for Canada, anyone who's stood out the most for you this tournament thus far?
For the Canadian team, it's funny because it's hard to pick a single guy. I mean, Peyton Krebs has looked good. Kirby Dock's been good. Alexi Lafreniere has been really good. I think Dylan Cousins has been terrific. Jacob Pelche, unfortunately, now with a broken wrist for 6 weeks, he's been good in this tournament. Hasn't put up as many points as I think he probably expected, but he's been good in this tournament. I look at the back end. Justin Barron isn't available till 2020. I think he's been maybe Canada's best defenseman. He's playing with Michael Vukojevic, and he's been really good as well. And Matthew Robertson in limited action has been strong on the back end. Bowen Byram, I mean, you go up and down this roster, the goaltenders have been strong. There really hasn't been a down performance from anybody.
Yeah, because the team's pretty even, at times, certain guys have had better games. There's no question, sure. And that's expected. But there hasn't necessarily been one player who every night you'd look and say he's their best guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I mean, you're getting consistent efforts from up and down the roster. Even the role guys, Jamison Reese, a small guy from the Sarnia Sting, he's playing an energy role here, and he's just gravitated to it, and he's doing that job perfectly. So yeah, even those guys you're not expecting to carry the load are doing their jobs.
We talked about the WHL, Guy Flaming joined us, so we're getting closer to the season coming around. The Oil Kings, of course, lots of changes on the ice, unfortunately, yeah. Even off the ice with Corey Graham. Would be a new voice for the start of the season as CG is recovering from some surgery to remove a lump from his back, and all accounts, he should be good to go here quite soon. But the Oil Kings, how much better do you think they can be?
Well, it's a great question because you've got a new coach. You got a new coaching staff, basically. So I think it's fair to expect there to be a bit of time where the team gets acclimated to coach and vice versa. So maybe they get out of the gates a little bit slower, but they should be better than they were last year because they've got another year under their belt. They've got some young players coming in. I'm looking forward to seeing what Jake Neighbors does as a full-time WHLer this year. He looked good in his limited 15-year-old action last season. And I'm intrigued to see what Vlad Alistrov brings to the team as their import.
I want to ask you about him. What do you know about him?
Well, he led their team in scoring at the World U18 last year, and he's 17 years old. And much like, I'm not saying he's Jack Hughes, but like the U.S. program, Jack Hughes started with the U17 team, was too good, so they brought him up midway through the season and ended up being the U18 team's best player. Belarus has a very similar program. And the same thing happened there. He was leading the U-17 squad by a mile. They brought him up, ended up finishing seventh on the team in scoring, the U-18s, but he only played like 14 games, and he had 20-some points. So he's definitely Belarus's best prospect right now, and he's with the Oil Kings. So let's see if he brings some offense.
And center iceman?
In terms of?
Like, where's he going to play?
Oh, he's a winger.
He was right, left?
I want to say he's a right winger, but he's not a center. I believe he's a right winger.
So who do you expect him to play with?
Well, that's a good question. I think because they brought in two not imports but overage guys via trade in Vince Laschiavo and Benjafield out of Kamloops, and they're both listed as right wingers. So is Trey Fix-Wolanski. So I think you're going to have some
somebody's
shuffling.
Somebody's going to move to the left side, right?
So I'm not sure who that is yet.
Who do you see as their number one center for the Oil Kings?
I would guess Laschiavo, but I think we're going to learn a lot at training camp.
Now, looking around the WHL, last year, man, you had the Central Division that was, Swift Current, but there's massive changes. Swift Current from their coach, their GM, yep. Lots of their players. Regina's had a lot of changes. Moose Jaw's lost a ton of guys.
Yep.
Is PA the best team in that division?
It might be. And PA and Saskatoon, actually, this should be the year Saskatoon makes the playoffs and makes some significant progress. So you could see a real changing of switching in the standings this year. I think Prince Albert on paper looks really good right now. And they finished the season last year playing really well and really pushed Moose Jaw in that first round, made them go seven games. So I think Prince Albert right now is probably my pick to be the top team in the East, which is... You know, they weren't in the playoffs last year, and how good that division was, it's hard to imagine that there's that big of a switchover from last year, but I think those top teams from last year are really going to drop off.
What about Edmonton, Calgary, Red Deer? Is Kootenay potentially the best of those four teams?
Of those four teams, I guess potentially, just because of Peyton Krebs. And that's a team that's been at the bottom for a while, so they've drafted high, so you would expect... some improvement there. I still think Lethbridge is probably the top team in the division. But, and again, much like the East Division, you're going to see the teams that were out of the playoffs should be pushing to get in.
This year, there's just like it was from the 98 class a few years, 2016, strong WHL contingent.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like there'll be a strong WHL contingent heading to the 2019 draft.
Really looks like a strong year for the WHL. And, I mean, half the Canadian team here is out of the dub, and we've talked about some of the other guys that are in this tournament from the WHL. So, yeah, I mean, it was not a good year in 2018 for the dub, but 2019 looks like a banner year.
Because you got Krebs, right? You got Kirby Dock. You got Matthew Robertson.
Yep. Schneider out of Medicine Hat and Sasha Mutala from the Tri-City Americans. And the list goes on. There's 11 guys here. You're probably talking about potentially top 60 guys.
Guy Flaming joining us. Now, Guy, I've been hearing whispers, and you're much more tapped in than I am to CHL and the WHL, that the talk of the draft has come up again, and that they might be contemplating. Are you hearing anything?
Every time I've asked somebody about it, everybody I ask that's not associated with the league says yes, it should go up a year to match the OHL and the Q. Everybody from the league I talk to about it say no. So there's the desire from everybody around the league, but not from the league itself.
Is it just because that's what they've always done?
I think it is. Well, that's what they'll say. What they'll say is that it's because the footprint of the WHL is so expansive that you got a kid from Manitoba who's relocating to Seattle, Washington, and there's a lot of hurdles, and you got to prepare the families for a year in advance for a move like that. Okay, I can understand that. But the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, you have kids from Newfoundland going to
exactly.
Quebec.
Exactly.
I mean, that's significant change as well. I still think it's so that the WHL teams have first crack at 15-year-olds and 14-year-olds ahead of the NCAA.
But the NCAA can only verbally agree. They can't actually sign the player, right? So if you want to take a verbal agreement at 15 over the WHL, you definitely could do that.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, your son gets injured at 16. That school has no requirement to honor that verbal agreement. Yep. That's what's crazy about it.
No, I agree completely. And quite honestly, if you get into a recruiting battle, I think you've got to stand up for what you believe you have that's better than anybody else. I mean, instead of knocking the college route, talk about how the benefits of the CHL. That's the way I've always felt.
Dude, I am so with you on that one. And the thing that the WHL has done excellent in the last decade or two, their education program now, because it's rarely talked about how, you can get a full ride scholarship to the NCAA and they can take it away after a year.
It's year to year.
No questions asked, right? Yep. It's a year-to-year scholarship. That is never, ever talked about very often from the NCAA, even to parents in North America, or specifically in the Western Hockey League, to say, okay, that looks all great now. You get a new coach coming. I know guys when I played. And I didn't play at any level, but I had buddies who played there. You know what? They went down for a year. All of a sudden, they're like, they revoke. Basically, they take your scholarship away.
Yeah.
And so, whereas in the WHL, you can play at 16, you're guaranteed a year of eligibility. You play at 17, you're guaranteed a year. If they cut you at 18, you still have 2 years of education that they have. That's mandatory. Doesn't negate it or anything. And so, it's. You know, the education program has improved significantly in the WHL. I would still like to see them extend the timeline from when a player graduates to me, it should be the equivalent of an entry-level deal.
That's what I've always said.
3 years, because you're asking kids now at the age of 20, in a lot of cases, because a lot of guys will leave the dub at 19, right? So they go 20. And, so they go there for a year, and some will go to the East Coast League at 20. They're probably better examples, because a lot of those guys are signed to three-year entry-level deals, so they're okay. But you go down there for 20 years of age, you sign an AHL-only deal, right? And let's say now you're starting to gain some traction. All of a sudden, you're on the second line. It's like, well, now midway through that second year, you got to decide. Either I'm going to quit this now and lose all of my scholarship money, or I'm going to try. Like, I don't think you should, if the WHL is as serious as they are about wanting to promote their education, then they should look and say, okay, you know what? We're going to give guys three-year options, right? You got to make that decision within 3 years. Not a year and a half afterwards.
Yep, I don't have any problem with that either. It is 3 years for entry-level deals. I know some guys get two-year deals. Those are mostly the college guys. But
that's
everybody
because of age. Everybody
at
the CHL is a three-year deal.
Yeah,
100%.
So, I've always felt strongly about that. I don't know why that's such a big hurdle. And maybe as this lawsuit progresses or doesn't progress, that might be the bargaining chip.
That was my last one. I never like to get into the law stuff. But it is a massive thing that's hanging around the teams. I've talked to some people in teams and – yeah, they're obviously concerned about potentially what could happen with it. The way I look at it is that let's say they lose the lawsuit and now the players have to get paid. There's nothing in there that says they also have to get now a guaranteed scholarship. Well. So they could just turn around and say, well, you know what? Okay, we'll pay you your, $13 an hour and there's no guarantee of a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and think about any parent out there, any young man, any guy in their mid-20s, some of us in our 30s and 40s don't necessarily manage our money the best. So now you're going to tell a 16- and 17-year-old kid, save that money that they're paying you.
Yeah.
What's the chance of that happening?
You ask the parent how they feel about that and which they would prefer.
Oh.
Minimum wage or guaranteed education package.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the last I've heard, though, there's only two provinces that are still involved in the lawsuit. The players and the teams have all been exempt from every province and state except Alberta and Ontario. The last time I talked to Ron Robinson, that was the case. So they're hoping, from the league's perspective, with the new government in Ontario, that that'll work itself out. But basically, it's down to two provinces that the lawsuit season
is interesting, because I don't know how you could have the teams in Alberta have to enforce that, but then the teams in BC and Saskatchewan in the United States and the WHL not.
Yeah.
Right? It would seem. It would seem. Now, could they do more? I don't think there's any debate on that.
Sure.
If they wanted to increase the per diem from these players, which really hasn't. When my brother played in the WHL in the late 80s, early 90s, and when Struds played, the per diem right now is basically the same.
Yeah.
Last I checked, cost of living significantly higher.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, if you want to, if a guy makes $80 now and you want to give him like a week now and you want to increase it twofold to 150, whatever, to cover his gas, I'm sure that's something teams could swallow.
Like that's where, to me, there should be some sort of negotiation. Now, who are you picking? Who's going to be in the final tomorrow?
Oh, I think it's Russia and Canada in the
Russia
final.
Canada.
I think the Russian-Swedish game will be closer than the Canadian-US game today.
Okay.
I think it's Canada's double A team. It's their A-plus team.
Yeah, they're not missing anybody, right?
They're not missing anybody, although Pelche is out now due to injury. But even their 13th forward, at least on paper, Dylan Holloway's looked really good in this tournament. So I think Canada's not going to have a whole lot of trouble with the U.S. I think it'll be a fun and entertaining game. You get two rivals together and anything can happen, but I think the Swedish and Russian game here coming up shortly is going to be a really good one.
Key, always good to catch up to you, man.
You
enjoy
too.
The game.
Thanks, Jason.